I don't mind being vulnerable. I don't mind doing or saying something that might make me vulnerable. Because number one, a lot of the times when you think you're doing or saying something that makes you vulnerable, you're not. And if somebody wants to capitalize on that perceived vulnerability, then you ain't going to be my friend. I just don't want, you know, in all honesty, I don't want anything to do with you, because if I'm open and I'm expressing something somehow and I'm exposing myself and being vulnerable, I don't want you jumping on me. You could say thank you for being open and vulnerable, but I don't accept it, whatever the word is, I don't care what it is, and that's a nice way to say it, but not hitting somebody when they're, in a sense, down, you know what I mean? That you're vulnerable and stuff. And I think non-humans do that a lot, you know, they just open themselves up to you, and I'm sure in their doggy or cat or wolf or chimpanzee, zebra, giraffe brain, they're hoping that somebody will not take advantage of them. They're expressing their vulnerability.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Purple Stars podcast. My name is Sarah. I'm your host, and we are back with part two with Dr. Mark Beekhoff. After last week's part one of the episode, you guys, wow, so many of you reached out and said how much you loved it and that you can't wait for part two. And I felt the same. I'm like really excited to be sharing this with you. And here we go.
When we talk about once more about seeing the unseen, would you be happy to share that story that you wrote in the chapter of Love is Blind about Charlie and Annie, in case you remember out of all the things you wrote?
I'm not remembering the whole thing. What page are you on? I've got the
It's
book.
84.
84. I love you're being casual about this all.
Well, I kind of figured you wrote so many books and so many publications. I don't blame you not remembering everything you wrote.
Why don't you say something about it, okay?
Yes, of course. So one animal was blind and the other one was not.
Right.
Oh, maybe you need more hints.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was the sighted dog leading the blind dog.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of like, Annie was a blind mule and her companion guide, Charlie. And they were residents at the Colorado Black Forest Animal Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
You still don't remember? Okay, that's not a problem. Do you want me to read it?
Read parts of it, if you will. I do remember, but I don't like to talk without remembering the details.
Of course. So it says, both were permanent residents of Colorado's Black Forest Animal Sanctuary, a nonprofit rescue organization. Annie was nursing a broken shoulder and bound for the slaughterhouse when BFAS volunteers brought her in. She lived at the ranch for more than a year before she met Charlie. Mm-hmm. Initially, Charlie and Annie were kept in separate pastures, but during one cold spell, all the livestock were herded into a single pen for warmth. Okay, don't worry. I keep reading it. Charlie hit it off with Annie. He started nestling up to her and playing with her, and the two became inseparable. Before, Annie had a hard time finding the water tank, but Charlie unfailingly led her to it. She followed him around the pasture, avoiding bumping into the fence, and they slept and cuddled together.
Mm.
Well, here you go. Like I'm here to reminding you of these amazing stories that you wrote.
Well, I mean, you are right, Sarah, and I appreciate your bailing me out. I owe you one. I mean, seriously, I mean, I think there are so many stories out there.
Yeah.
You know, the second edition here, I added like 300 references and a lot of stories, and we had to get rid of a whole bunch. I mean, that one survived, you know, and there's the next story is Love Dogs, Tika and Kobuk. you know.
Do you want to share that story? So I shared one and you shared one.
Well, the bottom line of the story was that Tika saved Kobuk's life because she was just having a horrible night, and she ran up and got her human to basically, you know, warn her about this that something grave was going on. I actually had that happen with two other dogs. They weren't mine, but when I lived on the in the mountains along the dirt road, all the dogs would come down to my house, and there was a dog out there, and I think it was Lolita, her name was Lolo, and she just wasn't feeling well. And I think it was Zeke who came. He just did something really unusual and would not stop pestering me. So I went out, and you know, there was Lolo really sick, and we lived in the mountains, and we had to get got her human, because all the dogs came to my house because I would feed them, and they liked sleeping in front of my office, and we had a beautiful view, and you know, maybe they have that aesthetic sense and said, wow, we can see the back of Flagstaff Mountain here, so I'm not staying home, I'm coming up here. But it is that connection. And it gets back to what we were talking about careful observation. I think Tika and Kobuk and also Lolita and Zeke, they watch one another very carefully. You know, animals watch one another very carefully. And so I would train, I hate to use the word train, but it was a form of training my students in the field to just, it's called focal animal sampling in the scientific literature. Just follow this individual for 10 minutes. Just follow them and take note of what they do and what's done to them, but that's it. And after a while, when you do that, you could do that with people too, you know, you really get to know their idiosyncrasies. And I don't mean that in a negative way. You know, you get to know who they are, how they respond to joy or fear, or when somebody's in their face, or when somebody loves them, and, you know, other aspects of their life. So there's a lot of stories out there. This plural of anecdote is data.
And I love also how animals are so intuitive. So mm-hmm. we have a puppy, his name is Felix, and I took him on a walk, and there was a lady with a dog, and she said, oh, like my dog is blind, so he's not really good with other dogs currently because he, you know, like he just gets scared. And she said, but your dog can say hi if he wants to. And I didn't say anything to Felix. And first he went into down position. And he was crawling very slowly towards the dog. He put his head on the back of the other dog. Then he saw the dog was reacting fine. And then he walked around and gave him a kiss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was such a proud dog mom.
Yeah, right. Well, but I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. Dogs, well, yeah, I mean, other animals can have intuitions about other animals.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, yeah, you could scientize that and say, well, maybe the blind dog was responding in a certain way, giving off a certain odor, making certain sounds that we don't hear. And that's all possible. But something led Felix to show that kind of mm-hmm. sensitivity, compassion, empathy. I mean, you know, whatever you want to call it. Well, that's another example, you know, because years ago we were writing about, sympathy and empathy among non-human animals. And do they, I mean, it just seemed that you can't evolve social groups of animals, non-human or human, without having some kind of empathic connection, some sensibility to what other animals are thinking and feeling. And of course, that was at first met with a lot of criticism and femininity or whatever you want to call it. and stuff. But now that's just part now of the way in which humans observe other animals.
Mm.
You know, yes, they show concern for the well-being of other animals. There's certain moral or ethical ground rules for the way in which these individuals interact. And you can't form a cohesive group without that kind of sensibility. You just can't do it.
Oh, yeah, totally. I agree with that. And while you were talking about those people that said, oh, like, how can that be? I remembered when my grandmother had cancer, we were at the hospital, and most of the doctors were very, you know, like traditional medicine, what's written in the book, and only X amount of percentage can recover. Most of them die. Like, there was no room for anything that was not written in the book. Mm-hmm. And I remember back then, I got so angry and frustrated and annoyed at them. And my grandmother stayed really calm. And I also need to point out, she used to be a nurse. So she probably was already quite used to their view of the world. And I said to her, Lola, and I called her Lola because that's the Filipino word for grandma. I said, Lola, like, how can you stay so calm? Like, I just don't understand. Why do they have this view? And why do they get like so offended when I say, oh, no, we do think there is like the possibility for her to recover? And she said, well, you got to think, when we talk about something that's not written in the books, we are they feel that we are questioning their view of the world.
Exactly.
And that's so fundamental to them. It would be like someone constantly saying to me, there is no God, although I truly believe there is one. Mm-hmm. And she said, let's just respect their worldview, even if they are not doing it for like towards us. Yeah, my grandmother, she was really amazing.
I like that though. Right. Just respect what they're saying. It doesn't mean... Yeah. Respecting doesn't mean you agree with them, you know. In some ways, you respect it and you hope they stop.
Yeah, that is so true. Yeah, I love that. We can respect others without agreeing. And I think that's like, which is probably also the foundation for a lot of things in life. And go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people that, you know, who are fighting about some kind of animal protection issue. I mean, I get to the point where I might say, Sarah, you're not going to change. I'm not going to change. Let's just move on. I respect your right. I respect that you have the right to say something. But that doesn't mean that I have to agree. Mm-hmm. And it's a very easy way to, I mean, for me, it's a very easy way to respect another's views and respect their right to express their views and move on and get something done and not spend the next 5 years by trying to convince you of something when you're not going to change and I'm not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that, yeah, I mean, I know there was a question in there about the work I did at the Boulder County Jail for years. And you just run into that, you know, I mean, these inmates, you know, I don't like that word, but, you know, they were my students, really, but they were inmates, you know, because of how they were reared and other situations. There's no way I would agree with them. And a lot of them came to see my view. But at some point I would have to say, look, you have a right to express yourself, you know, to me about what you did or what you wish you had done, but I don't have to agree. But respecting another individual's right to express themselves, I think goes a long way to at least not getting into some, you know, battle with them over something where there's no winner and no loser. The only loss is a loss of time working on behalf of other animals, if you want to translate it into, you know, animal protection.
Totally. And then also, it's important to choose our battles wisely.
Absolutely.
And use our energy for the battles that are worth fighting.
Absolutely. You know, because sometimes I'll just say, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And they'll say, well, you don't care. Yeah, I care. But what I really care about is getting something done and not trying to convince you to change because you're not going to convince me to change. And that often, it usually works, you know?
Amen.
Yeah. Amen.
Mark, you just mentioned the Boulder art behind bars class. And I read an amazing article. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to tell me about that one.
I might.
You wrote in the Psychology Today. Can you please share, for those who are not yet familiar, what is the transitions program at the Boulder County Jail? And I am very curious, what was the heart talk that inspired you to teach that class?
Well, the heart charge, and I like that word, was Jane was in Boulder, Jane Goodall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was traveling with her a lot. And she has a program called Roots and Shoots, which was founded in Tanzania in the early 1990s. And we were just talking, and there was a Roots and Shoots group at a federal penitentiary in California. And we were just talking, and I said, you know, maybe I should just try to teach at the local, you know, the Boulder County Jail. I mean, it's not, you know, people go, oh, it's the Boulder County Jail. It's just, you know, it's like a golf club. No. It's, believe me, I always say people, well, you can go spend a night there. I've been there a lot. I don't need to spend a night there. So it became part of the Roots and Shoots program. And what really got us going was when I wrote to them and went down and interviewed with them, I said, look, I'd like to just talk about animal behavior and conservation. And compassionate conservation was sort of on the rise. And, you know, the moral lives of animals and how we can learn a lot about how humans should interact cooperatively from non-humans. They laughed, but it wasn't a negative laugh. And I said, but I really would like to do this. I started doing it. I did it for years on end. But within the 2 months, it was the most popular class in the jail. And it was part of the transitions program, which dedicated to helping inmates transition out of the correction system. I mean, I had some, and I taught men, some guys were transitioning in, but it gave them skills to get them through some very long periods of being incarcerated. But the whole thing was learning compassion. And over the years, I had so many guys tell me that understanding how non-humans resolve conflict helped them learn how to resolve conflict among humans. You know, and, you know, some of these guys did some pretty nasty things. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they just did. That's why they were incarcerated. And that was the biggest reward. And then a lot of them were wonderful writers. Jane came, she was in Boulder some years ago. She went to the jail with me. And that very day, one of the inmates, students in my class had a poem published in a newspaper. So he got Jane to sign it. He was very proud of it. And they did a lot of artwork that won awards. I would take their artwork and bring it to art festivals. And
wow.
I remember this wonderful picture. One of Jane's favorite chimpanzees was Flo. And this guy, Jeff, did a drawing. And it won an award at a big art festival. And when I got the award in the mail and I went to give it to Jeff, he had been let out of jail and did not return, which was good news. You know, somebody said, oh, you won't be able to give it to him. He ain't here. And I went, that's good news.
Wow. I love that.
So the transitions program had a recidivism return rate much lower than the return rate from the general population of inmates. I loved it. Last week I ran into a guy who was in my class around Boulder, and, you know, he was down and out. So I bought him coffee and a donut, and I'm vegan. So he said, I ain't vegan. He was saying it jokingly, would you buy me a turkey sandwich? And I went, no, but I will buy you a donut that might have butter in it.
Mark, you did write in your article, you described teaching Boulder art behind bars as a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And it's evident the profound impact you had on students. And you mentioned that even one of them named his son after you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest compliment someone can ever give you.
Well, I really looked forward to doing it. It stopped when COVID came because, like a lot of, you know, closed communities, it became a petri dish for COVID. I loved going. I mean, really, I think I did it for 17 or 18 years every Friday morning. And I learned a lot about myself in the sense of tolerance, although I can't ever say that I looked at people who had been incarcerated, and I knew some before, you know, I started working there, as being lowly people, you know what I mean? People not worthy of any kind of kindness. But I learned a lot, and it really opened, I don't know if it's opened my eyes. It just made me realize that everybody, there might be some exceptions, can really make a positive contribution to society. So some of these guys had kids and they loved coming in. One guy used to show me pictures of his daughter at a duck pond where they lived. I have to be really careful about giving out information. But he loved it. He said, you know, because of you, I talk to my daughter and I tell her she should go to the local duck pond. So his 5-year-old daughter went and started quacking and running around like a duck. I mean, seriously. And so I, you know, once again, it was, I could understand why they were there. I didn't judge them. I didn't say, oh, you're bad people. If I had been raised the way some of them were raised, I would have done the same thing they did, just to adapt to a very unfriendly world, by the way. Not fun. And a lot of their creativity comes from that pent-up heart they have. So many really want to do good, they would say, but they had no avenue for expressing it. So I loved going in and I loved running into them. I ran into a guy some years ago who was working for the local Department of Transportation, holding signs, you know, stop, yield, go, you know, when they were doing roadway construction. So I was on my bike because I ride pretty much every day. And I heard somebody yell, hey, Doc. They used to call me Doc or Coyote Man or Dog Man. And I turned around. And I said, Ernie, which wasn't his name, it's so good to see you. He said, I've been out for 5 years, clean, huge. And I said, do you like your job? And he said, I love my job. He said, I'm outside. You know, Boulder has nice weather. Yeah, it snows and gets crappy. But I'm outside all day and I can tell all these people driving fancy cars to stop by turning my sign. But I said to him, oh, come on, Ernie, you be a nice guy. And he just laughed. He said, I am a nice guy. But he said, no one ever listened to me until I got this job. I mean, it was so, you know, turning a sign in the street was such a life lesson for him. He said, nobody ever listened to me. When I got out, I was an ex-con. I was a felon, you know. But I got this job. And now I just can turn and go yield, stop. And that's all I thought about. We were out on about a 5-hour ride. And at the end, somebody said, what have you been thinking about? I said, I've been really thinking about Ernie. It's the first time he felt empowered. It's the first time. It's hard to put in words if you haven't been where these guys and women have been, you know. So I can go on and on. I really miss it. But it disappeared just because of COVID.
I do really hope this program and class is going to come back, because I think Ernie's example is such a beautiful demonstration of the seeds that you have helped them to sow during that transition program of redefining their place in the world, finding their voice again, feeling worthy of being heard, of being seen, and knowing that they can be welcome again despite their past.
Yeah, being seen, being heard, is really true, Sarah. Empowering them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, You know, there were, yeah, I mean, people would say, well, they're nuts, they're crazy, just lock them up. You know, they're proud of what they did. No. I mean, once again, they're trying to survive in a very complicated world. And they learned, unfortunately, the wrong tools of the trade. So they learned to adapt to their world, doing things that are just not acceptable. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry. I mean, you know, it's just. Yeah, and I just love running into the guys who are still around Boulder. A lot of them are homeless, and seeing how they're thriving, doing whatever it is that, you know, if you will, keeps them free and out of trouble. Yeah,
it's such a beautiful inspiration how you are sharing your gifts in so many different ways.
Thank you.
Because I think it's not an obvious thing to go into like helping people that are transitioning from jail and helping them explore the emotional lives of animals and helping them to use art as a way of processing what they've been through and like moving through their challenges and their fears and finding their voice again and then feeling heard and seen. And I think you are such a beautiful example of what can be when we have the courage to follow our heart and our dreams and also be okay with being different. I mean this in a very positive way.
I know you do, because I sense you're different too, by the way.
Yes, I'm very different.
Oh no, I take that as a full compliment. So blessings to you. Yeah, you know, when you follow your heart, it just can go in different places and it can go rapidly or slowly. I mean, you can go from, you know, 0 to 180 in no time flat, if you will. But at the end of the day, it's really fulfilling. So, yeah, I mean, do you know what the word grok means?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, good. I figured you would. So I've actually taught a lot of people about the word grok. You know, it's from Robert Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange
Land.
Can
you share with those in the audience who are not familiar with it?
The way I define grok is simply a feeling and a connection that transcends time and space and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You just feel at, you feel one. So that's the way I look at it. I mean, I don't know you from Mary. I was going to say, I could say Henry, but you're obviously a woman. but I grok you. I get what you're saying. And that to me, among my, I mean, I have a lot of friends, but among the real, I don't want to say special, because they're all my friends are special, but there's that connection where you just don't have to explain anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, among my really close friends, you know, we all have our idiosyncrasies, and sometimes people will go, oh, that's just Mark, that's just Mary, that's just Annette, that's just Sarah, you know, that's just Christy. Mm-hmm. And it's a compliment, because what they're saying is, no BS, this is just who they are. Yeah, you said something an hour ago, and you just contradicted what you said an hour ago. Make up your mind. And I go, well, why? but it's that grokking, and what to me it's all about, and it goes beyond, if you will, the word grok and the act of grokking. It's feeling safe to be who you are. It's feeling safe to express yourself. It's feeling safe that you can be open and that you're not going to be judged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, that came out. I mean, those, the safety, judgmental, trusting things came out a lot in the jail class, where I had some guys say, you know, I really like you. I feel safe with you. You're not judging me. Yeah, I did something horrific, but you're not judging me. You trust me. And that's what it comes out to. So to me, that grokking and that that connection really is the foundation is trust and safety. And I think you have to have a very strong backbone yourself to be able to be that open with others. I really do. Because some people will say, oh, you have they have a strong backbone, and that indicates that they're selfish, they're closed, they're always right. No. What it really means is at your core, you know who you are. Mm-hmm. And there are things about you that you love, and there may be things about you that you wish you just didn't have. But you're not harming other people in that mm-hmm. way. It's just who we are. We're just a very complex big brain mammal. That's the way I always say it. Mm. And sometimes we do or say things that in retrospect, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. I mean, you know, and then, you know, so you do something and you go, oh shit, I wish I didn't say or do that. But you did. And I don't mean that in any kind of negative way. So if it's something you don't want to do again or feel again or say again, figure out what triggered it, what brought it out, and either avoid those situations or learn how to deal with them in a different way. Because we're always growing. I mean, we're always, every single day I feel I'm learning something and I'm feeling something that maybe I haven't felt before, or I felt it in a different way, or I'm learning something that I quote already knew, but I'm learning a new aspect of something. I don't know, or a feeling, you know. And sometimes, you know, I'll just be sitting here or wherever and go, "Ooh, wow!" And it's a very powerful feeling. But the grokking and the connection that's out there with, say, another individual being, a human, non-human, tree, flower. I talk to my flowers, and some of my neighbors think, oh God, we avoid this guy. I mean, no, we really all get along, but you know, it's the connection. And so being, spending time alone, being alone is not it's not a feeling of alienation. In fact, it's a complete opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, but others don't get it, and that's okay. But I think it really means that you have a certain sense of self. It doesn't mean that you're an egomaniac and that you think that you are the cat's meow or something like that. It really means that you know who you are, you know your foibles, you know the pros and the cons of how you view the world and things you have done and may do again, but it's part of your core, and I think, and your heart, you know, so you can always say, I love you, and you can always say, I'm sorry. And it's really up to others to accept that. I don't know where else to go with it. I'm sure philosophers could write a library of books about it, but to me, it's pretty simple. It's more, yeah.
I love how curious you are about exploring the depths of life and also how much you are in love with life.
Yeah,
thank you. That is really amazing, and I hope that it inspires others to feel the same and feel the same curiosity. And I also really love and deeply resonate what you talked about, our core and our heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer that life is about getting to know ourselves better in that sense. When I'm continuing a little bit of your thought on core and like honing our core. And then once we kind of figure out who we are, just protecting it, and not protecting as in I'm better than you, but saying this is who I am, this is who you are, and let's both respect what we bring to the table, and not compromising our core for someone else or something else, because otherwise we lose a lot of ourselves, a lot of our color. And so I think it's, and obviously in some seasons it's easier, in some seasons it's like hard and challenging, but it's all about getting to know ourselves and getting to know our core. And it's part of that is also knowing our gifts, knowing what sets our soul on fire, what gives us butterflies, and then also sharing this with others so they have, it also gives them the inspiration and the permission to do the same for themselves.
Exactly. And I do feel that I grant a lot of latitude to others because I would like that latitude too. And I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm, you know, giving people license to go out and harm people and all that. But, you know, on the positive side of life, that way is I don't want to be, quote, controlled, and I don't want to control you or other people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, people can beat that to death too. But it really means discovering, self-discovery. My dad was always into that for his many years on the planet. I remember when he was in his late 80s, he learned how to program. He learned how to build a website, and he called me once and he said, well, you know, you're into computers and that. Can you teach me HTML? I had no idea what it was. I really remember that, you know, as a very defining moment. And I said, what the hell are you doing? What's HTML? He said, well, I'm trying to design a website. And I said, I think your neighbor has a 10-year-old son. Go get the 10-year-old. I'm sure that he could build your website and teach you HTML. And then after he teaches you HTML, you can teach me HTML. But my father was, and my mom too, in different ways, was very curious and always learning and always open to learning. And at some point, you know, always open to, you know, sometimes we'd have these discussions after my mom passed away, you know, he'd say, oh, you know, yeah, well, they had a long marriage and, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Or I wish I hadn't said this years ago. What do you think? And I said, get over it. And I didn't mean it in that way. I said, you've gotten over it, but I understand the grief he was feeling and the sorrow and wishing he, you know, it's like I used to say to my mother, I would apologize for being, you know, a rambunctious high school athlete who would just not do everything she wanted me to do. And sometimes saying things that I wish I had never said and having it made clear to me by my dad that you will never do that or say that again. but always being open to learn, mm-hmm. and always granting, I mean, what you just said before, Sarah, is just so valuable, is granting, you're sort of giving permission to others to be who they are, to express their core. I think that's really a powerful statement, but it also opens the door for you to feel, I don't mean, you know what I mean, another person to feel safe, you know, and vulnerable. That was another word that comes up. I like uncertainty. I'm fine with uncertainty. I don't need the world to be black and white and sharp edges. And I don't mind being vulnerable. I don't mind doing or saying something that might make me vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Because number one, a lot of the times when you think you're doing or saying something that makes you vulnerable, you're not. And if somebody wants to capitalize on that perceived vulnerability, then you ain't going to be my friend.
Yeah.
I just don't want, you know, in all honesty, I don't want anything to do with you, because if I'm open and I'm expressing something somehow, and I'm exposing myself and being vulnerable. I don't want you jumping on me. You could say thank you for being open and vulnerable, but I don't accept it. Whatever the word is, I don't care what it is, and that's a nice way to say it. But not hitting somebody when they're in a sense down. You know what I mean? That you're vulnerable and stuff. And I think non-humans do that a lot. You know, they just open themselves up to you, and I'm sure in their doggy or cat or wolf or chimpanzee, zebra, giraffe brain, they're hoping that somebody will not take advantage of them. They're expressing their vulnerability.
One of the many lessons I've learned from my mom, I remember in my early 20s, whenever I said, oh, I'm scared to share this with someone and say this and say that, she said, Sarah, whenever you share respectfully and honestly what's happening inside your heart, you always win.
Absolutely.
Either bravo, because bravo. You build bridges.
Yep.
Or because there is a bridge burned that shouldn't be there anymore.
You know what? I was going to say that. You always win by either winning or gaining something, if yes. you will, or losing something. That losing, I know that's so funny because I had a discussion with somebody some few years ago, and it was frustrating to me, but she didn't quite get that losing could be a form of winning. Mm-hmm. And to me, I just intuited it, you know? And it's a loss in almost like an empirical way. You might lose a friend, you might lose a dollar, you might lose whatever it is, but it's not really a loss. It's mm-hmm. It's a gain in the sense of now you don't have to, quote, have any worries about losing what you just lost, but it opens a door. See, to me, that's the freedom that I would like, that I wanted to grant to the prisoners and I'd like to grant to non-humans and humans, is just be who you are. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I don't mean if you're, you know, a maniacal killer, be a maniacal killer. And I say that jokingly, but I say that too because I've worked with people who have done nasty things. But if being who you are is expressing your heart and expressing concern, love, empathy, something positive, just do it. And if someone's not receptive to it, then that's just the way it goes. And I don't mean that in such a casual sense, because we've all had losses of people, friends, etc. But it's free. It's freeing. It's just freeing. And I love when people say, "Oh, that's just Mark," because I could just turn around to somebody and say, "Ah, that's just Andy. That's just Christy. That's just Heather." And the reason that we're such good friends is because we accept one another's idiosyncrasies and move on. You know, we're not always taking things personally. Mm-hmm. That's another thing, you know, to me, there's a core of egocentrism there when somebody takes everything personally. And I always say, it ain't about you. And you can only say that to close friends.
Oh yeah, them. Totally.
But no, this isn't about you, mm-hmm. you know? And it's not necessarily about me. It's just about, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm often, maybe not that often, but oftentimes it happens that I can't find the correct ways to express something verbally because there's other ways of expressing these feelings.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
Without a word. See, to me, silence is golden. And I love that sharing in silence because you've got to have your senses alive. You can be visually sensitive, tactilely sensitive, olfactorily sensitive, acoustically sensitive. And, you know, once again, I mean, it sounds like I'm making it mechanical, which I'm not at all. But a lot of that just comes from watching non-humans who can't talk to me in English, because that's the language I do the best in. So once again, you're being forced to just really closely observe another individual. And with a human, you could say, oh, well, are you feeling this? This is what I'm picking up. With a dog or a non-human, you can't say that, but you can get an idea of what they are really thinking and feeling by just, I mean, I can't think of another word, but focusing and looking right in their eyes, just looking. And, you know, people don't like eye contact. I like eye contact, but people don't like eye contact because there's a lot there going on in your, whatever these things are, your pupils.
Yeah.
So, oh God, this is an amazing conversation. Oh God.
Mark,
sorry.
I was just about to say, wow, I want to talk about all of this. But I also, I would love to talk for hours more. And I hope that throughout our conversation, I could excite you to coming back to our podcast at some point again. Because as you know, I still have probably 10 questions that I would have loved to ask you.
Yes.
But I just, one thing, I love who you are.
Well, thank you.
And I love everything you shared, and that you're so vulnerable, and that also that you felt safe enough to be vulnerable in our podcast, and that we also honored your parents, and that we could also see through the class you have, you taught at the Boulder Jail, like the power of animals, how it can really go way beyond anything that some of us can even imagine. Mm-hmm. And one last thing, we always wrap up every episode with a very short animal Q&A. And I know that one of your previous dogs was called Minnie, right?
No, that's a friend's dog, Minnie.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes, but that's okay. Yeah, Minnie is still around, and I'm having dinner with my friend later.
Okay. I did a wrong research.
No, that's okay.
Okay, but nevertheless, maybe then we do dedicate it to Minnie. What is one of the biggest lessons you have learned from her about life?
Oh, gosh. Well, with respect to the canine world, her humans, Tom and Lisa, give her as many canine dog freedoms as possible. And one lesson that I always use, and it comes back to dogs, but I also think it comes back to people, is when you feel free, you have a full life. Mm-hmm. And Minnie is one of the most well-behaved dogs I've ever known, because she loves her freedom to be Minnie. So if Tom and Lisa have to stop her from doing something, I think in her canine brain and heart, she's going, yeah, what the hell? I'll just stop doing it. I can do just about anything I want otherwise. We'll have to pick this up sometime. There's such a deep message there, because I think, at least for me, and I sense for you, but the freer I feel I am, the more open I would be to somebody asking a difficult question, or by saying no. You know what I mean? It's hard for me to say that, because I enjoy my freedom. So like with Minnie, you know, they live in the mountains, and she has to be careful of mountain lions or cars on a road near her. So it blows my mind, only in a sense, it blew my mind. I shouldn't say it still does, because with all my dogs, I never formally trained them when I lived in the mountains. They just hung out. I gave them food rewards. They were free all the time. Their friends would come down the road. There could be 5 or 7 dogs just laying in front of my office. They knew they'd get to play. I would hide treats all over my land, and they could spend 6 hours looking for bones the size of a marble and show one another. I, you know, Jethro, to Minnie or someone, I got a bone, it ain't yours, and play these games. But I do, Sarah, think that for me in relationship, and it could be with non-humans or human animals, that the more I feel people are accepting of me, the good, the bad, the ugly, the individuality, the idiosyncrasies, the more comfortable I feel with them and the more open I am to their saying, well, you know, I'd like to ask you why you said something. You know what I mean? And it could be a criticism, but it's really meant in a positive way to enrich your life.
Mm-hmm.
But I really see Tom a lot and his wife every now and again, but I do see Minnie. And I mean, seriously, and Tom's a pretty free, footloose and free person, as is his wife. And so is Minnie, but she knows that if Tom says, please don't do that, he's doing it for my betterment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people will then, of course, say, well, what do you know? And I say, if I have to explain that to you, I'm out of here. I am out of here.
Mark, thank you so much for sharing this life lesson with us. That could have been an entire another episode talking about the freedom to be ourselves and how animals inspire us.
Yeah.
I so much enjoyed every single second of our conversation. I am so glad you agreed to coming on our podcast and sharing your insights and your love for life and animals and for others and for yourself. And I am so sure that people that are tuning in and our Purple Stars family, that they will feel inspired, that their cup will overflow. And yeah, I just can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. It's a wrap for today, everyone. If you loved the episode as much as we did, please share it with your family, with your friends, and anyone who could love and benefit from this episode. And we're excited to have you back next Wednesday.